your baseball tribal chief.
Acknowledge me.
MLB Insider, USA Today, Odyssey Sports, friend of the program, Bob Nightingale joins us. Bob, happy New Year, brother. We all got a nice New Year's gift here in Houston when the Astros announced they were signing Japanese star pitcher Tatsuya Imai. What does his acquisition mean for the team, and what do you expect as far as what the Astros rotation might look like?
Well, certainly, I mean, he should be one of the top, you know, two or three starters for sure. I was surprised, you know, he didn't get more money. I think everybody was, but everybody was just, you know, not sure what you're going to get. I thought he'd get more just because of what, you know, what happened in the playoffs or World Series, you know, for, you know, with the Dodgers, Yamamoto looking so good. So we'll see. But, you know, for the price tag they got him for, I thought it was a steal and a no-brainer, you know, very, very low risk.
Bob, Chris Partsy here. So what's the next shoe to drop, in your opinion, for the Astros in terms of offseason moves?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I can see them going after a, the other Japanese player. I'm not trying to name now.
Okamoto.
Okamoto. Yeah, Okamoto. You know, if they trade Paredes. You know, otherwise, probably just some little tinkering here and there. But I don't see any major moves.
So, and that kind of brings me to where I wanted to go with you next, which is they still have the glut on the infield where you essentially have Christian Walker and Isak Paredes to share one position, both of whom are going to be making way too much money to share a position. You have Jake Meyers, who's, you know, gotten some attention in trades for, you know, in center field. They still have Jesus Sanchez, who's kind of been a forgotten member of the team, almost assumed by everybody here locally that the Astros are going to find a way to move him. What is there anything going on with the Astros on the trade front, and or what moves might you see them making?
Well, I think with them it might be a deal where, okay, who doesn't get Bregman, you know, who doesn't get some of these guys, then or Arenado, and then they can be a fallback option to, you know, get Paredes. Like, okay, if we don't get these guys, they will make a trade for Paredes. I would think he'd be more logical than Walker, just because I think he's got more value for the buck.
Well, what do you see them do? The Astros have is Jake Meyers coming back? Is Jesus Sanchez going to be on this team? What do you think their outfield looks like?
Yeah, it's wide open. I mean, you kind of don't see Meyers coming back. You know, someone's like, well, do they really want him that bad, or do they think they can do better? So, you know, they may. Who knows? They can be trading a Freddy's or Walker, for that matter, to get outfield help. You know, go that way. You know, certainly some teams that have a glut of outfielders that might be willing to do that. So just a regular baseball trade. But sometimes those don't happen until spring training. You know, you see what you got, who gets injured, you know, that sort of thing.
Bob, do you think it's likely that we see either Christian Walker or Paredes traded by the time we get to spring training before that?
I would say unlikely, just because they, you know, I mean, teams are putting the roster together. So if nothing happens the next, you know, 2 weeks or so, I think you hold on to them. Then you just bring everybody into spring training. There's always spring training trades and stuff like that. And you're always going to have, someone's going to have some unforeseen injuries. You know, it makes it a little tougher this year because of WBC. You know, you're not sure, you know, who's going to be around, you know, that sort of thing. But I think it'd be more unrealistic to see both of them on the roster come opening day, but not necessarily, you know, spring training can be fine.
Talking with Bob Nightingale, longtime MLB insider with USA Today, with us on the guest line. Bob, what do you equate to a slow-moving free agent market right now?
I just think you know, I know at the GM meetings and winter meetings, nobody used the potential lockout for a reason for anything. But now you're kind of wondering, wow. I mean, except for Dylan Cease, we haven't seen a free agent, you know, get the money they wanted. So, obviously, you know, these price tags, remember we're talking, people are talking about Kyle Tucker for, you know, $400, $500 million, something like that. You know, you're not even hardly hearing his name. You know, Bregman's name hasn't come up, certainly not for a six-year deal. And I'm not sure. I think maybe these guys had a lot higher value in mind that they're going to get. So I don't see anybody giving Tucker, you know, the $400+ million that, you know, that he wanted. So I think maybe the whole free agent market, these guys could be in for a rude awakening.
If the entire free agent market, really outside of Cease, is kind of depressed in years and dollars, and, you know, we're going into the final year of a CBA, have you started to hear anything from the players' union regarding the word collusion?
No, I think I have not. And, you know, we'll see what happens with the rest of the market. I mean, there's still a lot of big stars out there. But when, you know, when Dylan Cease got the 210, it's okay, he set the bar. I don't know if that scared people. And I think maybe more teams are thinking, you know what, these big deals aren't working out like we thought. You know, we're not going to give the long-term contracts. I mean, look at the Mets. Steve Cohen's got all the money in the world, and he's got his own, you know, president of baseball operations, David Stearns, saying, I don't believe in him. We're not going to give him out. And maybe you know, a lot more people are kind of copying the same thing.
Well, they can't give out more than 3 years. They only give out 15.
Yeah, exactly. That was a Steve Cohen thing. Yeah.
It feels like it. Bob, so, I mean, with that being said, could you see this, I guess, slow-moving free agency period kind of being the norm moving forward in, you know, in the next, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years?
I would hope not. I mean, I know baseball has talked about having some kind of a deadline. The union spot that. Trade deadlines and agents want a trade deadline to move the free agent process more, and then the the owners want a free agent deadline, and union doesn't want that. But yeah, it's just such a slow trickle. I mean, it's a so much more, you know, more boring than the other sports. Yeah. You know, when free agency hits, they're just going crazy all at once. And now we're going to have the same thing again. We're just a slow trickle right into spring training again.
So, I mean, would something like that be a big enough issue to hold up CBA talks? Like the deadlines you were just talking about?
No, I don't think so. No. Yeah, I don't think that part of it. But it just does, you know, make the offseason kind of a drudgery type thing.
Yeah.
Where people don't pay attention. I know the most exciting time was when we had the lockout for the COVID, you know, when the players get back to work that year, and then everybody started signing within, you know, a week. You know, that was a blast. And this has been tough.
Clearly, the next CBA will have a transfer portal for all players who want to be free agents.
Yeah, that'll make it fun.
request a trade and one of the transfer portal.
That'll make it a lot of fun.
Hey, Bob, we've seen, you know, Munetaka Murakami signed a below expected deal on the south side of Chicago. We opened this interview talking about the below expected deal that Tatsuya Imai signed. There were a lot of players from Japan and Korea, particularly players who started their careers here in the States, didn't have success, went overseas, found success, now coming back, who've signed really, you know, team-friendly price deals, as opposed to, say, a pitcher who was performed not as well but was here in the States. Those guys are getting more money. Is there – we've seen in the past players coming from Japan – and get big money deals. Is there currently a depression in the Japanese/Korean market for players coming into MLB?
Yeah, I don't know why, because you talk about, you know, more and more stars. I mean, you know, you look at the, you know, with the Dodgers and Yamamoto, people go, oh, man, you know, what was he going to do? And, you know, he was one of the, you know, top pitchers in all of baseball last year. But when the Hiroki Sasaki, was a semi-bust. Now, he pitched well in come playoff time, but he was a bust during the season. So I think just people don't want to take that gamble. But yet you have Americans that go over there. If they perform well, they've got their contracts and they're very well coming back. So I think that's why, some of these cases, especially in my case, you have a opt-out after every year. Like, really, that's all he's going to get? So, I mean, force him to perform well the first year so he can show people, okay, this is what you missed out on. Now do you want me?
Bob, who is the next big name as far as foreign-born or players playing overseas that I guess is on the come up but isn't on our radar here yet in the States, if there is one?
I know there's supposed to be another pitcher over there, and I can't think of his name, but we'll hear about him at the WBC. Mm. I mean, that's why a lot of these guys' names came up to WBC.
Yeah.
Whether Amaya, Murakami and stuff, is like, okay, man, these guys are studs. And so I think we'll get a much better gauge come WBC time as far as hearing about these guys and their potential.
Bob, where do you expect Kyle Tucker is going to land?
I still think Toronto. I just don't think there's a market for him. I think Toronto has always been out there. I'm not sure they made an offer. They don't want to bid against themselves. That stuff happened, last year. It really irritated them. You don't hear about him with the Cubs at all. I don't think Cubs necessarily want him back. The Dodgers say, okay, we'll give you a 3 or 4 year deal. You want to take that? So, I mean, someone's going to be in for a rude awakening here. It may be him.
Where do you have what's going on with Framber Valdez?
Same thing. I think when he saw the $210 million, he's got to think, man, I'm a whole lot better than Dylan Cease is. And certainly, he didn't have a great year last year. Cease was very mediocre. So I think that he's probably holding out for around $200 million. He's not getting it and kind of waiting to see, who will finally step up. But certainly, he's the best guy out there. I think, what's worried teams too is just, man, he's had some, kind of a temper tantrums type thing. Obviously, the issue with the catcher last year has scared some teams. I think if that stuff hadn't happened, he would already be signed by now.
And, of course, the final piece of the triumvirate is Alex Bregman. Do you think he winds up back in Boston?
I do. I think they won the most. I think they need the most. Detroit was big in the mix last year, and I think Detroit felt jilted, like, hey, we made you a good offer and you used it. And we just made the playoffs, without you, we can do it again. I know a lot of talk with the Cubs, but Matt Shaw played very well as a rookie. And obviously, they made the playoffs without Bregman. Arizona's kind of like, well, if nothing else happens for you, we're here. If we can move our own guy, I can tell Marte. But they can't sign him. They already have Marte on the budget. So I still think Boston makes the most sense.
Where is Bo Bichette? If Kyle Tucker winds up in Toronto, does that mean they're out on Bichette?
I would think so. I don't think they can afford both. I think it's too much. I'm not saying it's not impossible. I think Bichette's got a big asking price too. And I think people are using Bichette versus Bregman. Like, okay, who will take our money here? And teams will, kind of make offers to both, saying that, if you guys want it, first come, first serve. So we'll see what happens. I would think Bichette would be a natural fit, whether Boston or anybody else that doesn't get Bregman.
Is he more likely to play short, second, third? Where does Are his days of being a shortstop numbered?
I think so. I mean, he was way below average defensively. Of course, he missed a lot of time, too. Second base, he looked very good in the playoffs. So I would think a lot of teams will look at him at second base. Seems like a great athlete, too, where play a number of positions in the infield. Who knows? Maybe one day he's in the outfield, too. But, you're signing him for the bat, not the defense.
All right, Bob, last one for you, and yes, there is a little bit of sarcasm in this. Are the Yankees not going to spend any money this offseason?
Well, I think they made an offer for Bellinger and kind of saying, hey, yeah, we're interested in you. If they don't get Bellinger, maybe then they have to look toward Tucker. But I think what the owner, Hal Steinbrenner, is saying is, wait a minute now. You know, we had over $300 million payroll. And, what did it get us? Tampa Bay's got the low payroll every year. And they're right, fighting for the division title. And don't have to look any further than the Milwaukee Brewers, like $130, $140 million payroll. Granted, they're in a weak division, but, you can win with a smaller payroll. And I think, I know Houston went over the luxury tax last year. A lot of times I think it's what Jim Crane's thinking is too. It's like, hey, you can spend what you want right up to luxury tax. I really don't want to go over it, unless you're guaranteeing me a World Series appearance.
I just spent the last 2 weeks in New York with family, 90% of whom are evil Yankees fans, and their misery over the fact the Yankees haven't done anything warmed my heart.
Yeah, and the Cubs fans are going for the same thing. Like, wait a minute now, what are we doing? But, a lot of teams haven't spent, money yet. And, we are January 2nd. I mean, you hate to say it's still early, but let's see what happens here the next 3 weeks.
He's Bob Nightingale, a longtime MLB insider with USA Today, Odyssey Sports, with us on the guest line. Follow him on X, Twitter, at B Nightingale. Bob, thank you so much for taking some time with us, brother. Happy New Year to you and the family. We'll talk soon.
All right. Happy New Year, guys. Take care.
All right. Appreciate Bob Nightingale with us on the guest line. You heard, the first part of that interview, we pretty much talked about the Astros. You heard what he had to say about the Astros. Let's dive into that a little bit more next.
It's an Academy Sports and Outdoors Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
He's Chris Partsy. I'm Patrick Creighton in for John and Reg on In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Colin Neal on the other side of the glass, and I just had to get his attention because I can't do the whole thing if he's not paying attention. And since we didn't get to do this at the top of the hour when Colin first made the hot tag coming in, Mitchell Melmacchi going out, let me set this up the proper way introduce my producer properly. He is Colin the Game Neal.
Time to play the game. Time to play the game.
All right, now that we got propers out of the way, we got to get our propers in for our producer. Especially after, for the second day in a row, I somehow convinced him to stop and pick up pizza for us.
Hey, Colin is the man.
Super producer, Colin.
Thank you. Colin.
Whose voice is that?
Is the man.
It's ND.
Oh, it's ND Kalu.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that ain't a regular around here. Whose voice is that?
He nailed it, though. Super producer.
Stop by. Got us. 2 days in a row, we are feasting on Pink's Pizza, which, as we said earlier, may have become the new official pizza of Area 45. Because we've been looking for a new local pizza place, and we may have found it. I also like the fact that they had wrestlers, like masked wrestlers on the pizza boxes yesterday.
They got luchadors,
And I can't really see what's on it today, but they've got what looks like, a clown.
It's like a clown.
Yeah, it's a little clown on it this time.
With a little top hat. It's way too small for his head.
I don't know. I like the masked superstar
I like the luchador. Yeah, I like that.
All right, so we just heard from Bob Nightingale talking about the Astros and what's going on around Major League Baseball and how slow the market is right now. And after Dylan Cease, it seems teams just, like, the heinies got very tight when it came to giving out the money.
Clinching.
And they are all petrified of giving out the money. And
suddenly they're petrified of giving out money.
Well, there's expected to be a work stoppage at the end of the 2026 season. Both owners and the players union both think a work stoppage is coming. And, why would either we've seen a situation where neither side really wants to work with the other side. They just want to impose their will and be like, you're just going to give us what we want.
Of course.
Like, negotiation has gone out the window, and it's just, you're going to give us everything. No, we're going to, you're going to give us everything.
It's all or nothing.
Yeah,
for both
there's
sides.
No middle ground.
And you get nowhere in a negotiation, air quote, negotiation, with that attitude.
And can I tell you, if there is a loss of the regular season in 2027, I'm going to have to be heavily medicated.
Wow.
Because I can't go through like another summer of no baseball.
Now,
we kind of had to do that in 2020 where we didn't get baseball till like July.
But that was different, though.
We didn't have any sports.
Yeah, but that was different.
Yeah, but that's still brutal. Like baseball in the summer in the U.S. of A. just doesn't sit, and without it, it just doesn't sit right.
But that was a different circumstance, though.
It was.
This time it's greed. It would be greed.
It almost happened a couple of years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But then who we just had on, Bob Nightingale, was the one that kind of broke it like, hey, they're making progress. We will have baseball.
How tough would it be this time around, though, for baseball to bounce back from supposed lockout, strike, whatever it may be?
I'll tell you what. During COVID, when we had literally no sports except UFC.
Hell yeah.
Thank God for UFC. I found myself for the first time in, I don't know, 20 some odd years, watching non-sports programming on the regular.
Mm-hmm.
Previous to that, I literally watched Law and Order and NCIS. And like, that was like the only non-sports shows that I never watched.
SVU, I got you.
But now all of a sudden I started watching all these shows that I never even freaking heard of.
Yeah.
Started watching things like The Boys.
It was a new world.
And The Witcher. And just like all these different shows. I never heard of any of this stuff. I started watching a show called Warrior. I watched more non-sports programming over the last 5 years than I watched my entire life.
Wow.
As far as like stuff that's not movies. Movies are a totally separate category.
Yeah.
But like shows that are television shows, and whether it's on a streaming platform or it's on broadcast, whatever, it's a television show.
TV shows, yeah.
I've watched more TV shows in the last 5 years than I watched my whole life.
Oh, so you kept with it. You kept watching them.
Yeah.
Even after the pandemic.
Just less. Like, because there's not as much time.
Of course.
You know.
A lot of sports to cover. Just in Houston.
I had never heard of The Witcher, but I watched 2 seasons of it.
I've heard of it, never watched it.
It was the first 2 seasons I watched when I had COVID. New Year's Eve 2020.
Well, you had more than enough time.
So I was basically locked in my bedroom for 9 days. I had to find out how to get Paxlovid because it was a brand new drug that came out for COVID at the time. And only...
Probably hard to get.
There was one Walmart that had it,
like
somewhere deep into Richmond. That my wife went and drove like 50 minutes to go find this one Walmart that had it. I called all the local like CVS and Walgreens, HEB, nobody had it. One Walmart way the hell out nowhere, they had it. And she drove all the way out there to go get it twice. Because remember, it was COVID. You had to get everything had to be done over the internet.
That's right, yeah.
So the first time they gave us the prescription online, they did it wrong. So then I had to get it.
Irritating.
They had to go do it a different way. And then she had to go back out there again.
So irritating.
That's
brutal. This is why
I'm married.
You got a good wife, man.
Because, like, she's not just my wife. She's my secretary. She's my, like, data input person. Like, everything about my life, she has somewhere.
Executive assistant?
Yeah. Like
everything.
Everything I need. Every appointment that I have. Every medication I take. Every time I'm due for whatever checkup. Like, she has everything, like, dated and in a file and in her calendar. And she knows exactly when I have to do everything. I don't know when I have to do everything, but she knows when I have to do everything. She literally is like my executive assistant with everything.
Hey,
so, and while maintaining
it's a good deal.
While maintaining her own full-time job.
Yeah, that's a good deal right there.
While maintaining the house, while taking care of our kids when they're home and
Well, at least you get up at 5 a.m. and take the dog out.
Yes.
That's your role.
That's because when her alarm goes off at 5 a.m.,
for work,
she goes, oh, and the dog's like, yeah, I'm excited to go out. I'm like,
all excited, jumping
I'll
around.
Put the dog out. And then I try to not walk into,
at least the least first, you can do.
Try not to walk into the armoire, then not to walk into the door, then not to walk into a closet.
Yes, please don't.
And then not to walk into a chair make my way to the back door to open the door and give my dog a cookie.
You got a lot of obstacles in your house.
Sounds very treacherous.
You got way too much going on in there, man.
You know, and if you think that I'm blind now, I first open my eyes and they don't function. As you get older, you will realize every time you open your eye, I can't see. Wait a second. Start rubbing your eyes like 5 minutes later. All right, things are blurry, but there might be light. Rub my eyes for another 5 minutes.
I went through that a few months ago. I'd scratched my eye, my pupil.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Ouch.
I got up one morning and my left eye was just blurry. I thought I was dying. I thought it was over. Ended up going to the eye doctor. It was just a scratch on my pupil or cornea, whatever it is. Yeah.
Scratch cornea. Yeah, that is
a Astros-like injury right there. Scratch cornea, eye discomfort, about 4 to 6 weeks.
Discomfort.
It was not the most comfy thing ever. So yeah, it was an ordeal. Thought I was dying there for a minute, or at least going fully blind. I'm already half blind.
Well, at least you're here.
I'm here. I made it. Maybe.
All right. Things that the Astros need. Number one, backup catcher.
Yes.
I'm going to give you some options. You're going to tell me what you think as far as backup catcher. Victor Caratini, Jonah Heim, Elias Diaz, Gary Sanchez. Any of these exciting you?
I thought you had another name coming up. I mean, Caratini is familiar. All right? So
Caratini last year made $6 million. Mm. And according to SpotTrack, his market value is about 2.3. Wow. Jonah Heim, who couldn't hit a lick last year, made $5.2 million, but his market value was listed as $6 million. Okay. Elias Diaz made $3.5 million last year, market value listed as $2.5 million. Mm. Gary Sanchez made $3 million last year, market value $4.3 million. Sanchez, of course, projects more like a DH than catcher.
Yeah. It might not be the best move, best option.
Diaz is 35. Caratini is 32. Heim is 30.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going Caratini. Yeah. It's the familiarity there. How about you?
I don't know that Jonah Heim's ever going to hit again. You know, he kind of like many of the Arlington junk grabbers back in 2024 when they won a World Series, like how they basically, like, everybody on the team had a career year. Well, wait, is it 2 years now since they've won?
Yeah.
Okay, so in 2023, Heim hit .258 yeah. with a .755 OPS. He had 18 homers and 95 ribs. He was an all-star and a gold glover. In 2024, he hit .220 Ooh. With a .267 on base and a .602 OPS. Last year, he hit .213 God. With a .271 on base and a .602 OPS.
So
those numbers are ass.
It would seem like he's in the decline, like deep into the decline.
And meanwhile, he's 30.
Wow. So he's the youngest of that group you just mentioned there, right?
He's the youngest of the group, and he was dead wow. ass. Yeah. Victor Caratini last year, .259, .324 on base, .728 OPS.
I think you work with that, right? I think so.
.728 OPS. For a catcher, for backup catcher, yeah. who gave 12 homers. Not ass. No. I mean, it ain't great. But he was, I mean.
But for a backup catcher.
Jonah Heim was .602. You're encroaching on Maldi numbers there. Caratini at least was a 728.
Yeah.
Would you like to know the numbers on Elias Diaz?
Yes, please.
All right. Elias Diaz, about to enter, I believe, his 11th year in the league. Sorry, 12th year in the league.
Yeah.
Last season, 204, oof, 270 on base, 607 OPS. Ass. Just ass.
I mean, to be fair, in fairness to him, well, I guess the year before, he didn't play that many games, so.
I think we're at the point of just, Dana, pay Victor Caratini.
Please.
Just pay him.
What'd you say his market value was?
It said, it listed at 2.2, which clearly he's probably going to get about $8 million.
Yeah.
But just pay Victor Caratini, because your other options are, well, they're awful. How about former Astro Christian Vasquez? Remember, the Astros acquired him. He was hitting 282 with a 759 OPS for the Boston Red Sox in 2022. Would you like to know what he's done since then? I'm just going to give you the OPSs.
That already sound bad.
I'm just going to give you the OPSs, because 598, 575, yikes, 545. Ugh. Not with a 39.5-foot pole.
In the tank.
Absolutely.
In the tank.
At the plate, straight washed. 3 years straight washed. To think that he was once considered an offensive improvement over Martin Maldonado, mm, just that the next 3 years he could be Martin Maldonado. Mm. Yeah, it's...
Sounds like Caratini is the way to go.
Just pay the man.
For sure.
Pay the man. Coming up next, did the Rockets find another death lineup? Next.
It's an Academy Sports and Outdoors Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, here's In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
He's Chris Partee. I'm Patrick Creighton, in for John and Reg in the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Have the Rockets found another death lineup?
Uh-oh.
So, thanks to our buddy Brado on Twitter, who does lots of these stat dives, really so that I don't have to. Appreciate you, big dog.
Hey, he's a great follow for all things Rockets. Highly recommend.
Always appreciative of people who do the work so that I don't have to, because every chance that I have to not do work, it's a win. Allows me to eat more pizza.
Is it because you're lazy? No, I'm kidding.
Listen, I can be lazy AF, man. Like I said, once you cross, you know, the 50 barrier, it's like you're allowed to be lazy. It's acceptable.
You've earned it.
Yeah, I did my hard time. Now I let all these young cats who are so hungry and eager to get all their information on them. Thank you.
Appreciate I'll take it. And use it. That's what you do.
So he notes that in a total of 51 minutes, the Rockets have outscored their opponents by 48 points when they have their lineup consisting of Amen Thompson, Kevin Durant, Alpi Shengun, Jabari Smith, and Tari Eason. Houston has won 17 of their last 18 games in which Tari Eason has started. Their net rating when Tari Eason plays alongside, quote, the starters, is plus 45.2. That number, by the way, for those of you keeping score at home, we know you are. Not ass.
Not at all.
Is this the new death lineup for the Rockets, or is you think it's too small a sample size and not really sustainable?
I believe it has the potential to be a death lineup, but it is a very small sample size right now, and I'm someone who's of the belief that they still need to go out and find veteran point guard presence, like an actual pro. Because they don't, I mean, this lineup, there's no legit, I won't say legit, but I guess traditional point guard, like, you know, in the vein of a Fred VanVleet. There are guys that are going to be available. Trade deadline is coming up February 5th. They may not necessarily need it, have the greatest need in the regular season, but come playoff time, I think they're going to need that guy. I do.
Are you looking for them to try to make a trade for a highly paid player or for a cheaper player?
I don't think it's going to be a highly paid player. I mean, I know last time I was on Area 45 with Bajani, we kind of ran this down and had a list of names that I can't remember right now. But one name that I threw out is a guy that he's, I guess, in that mid-level of highly paid players, but was and he's more of a combo guard, but he can run the point. Is C.J. McCollum. Because a guy like him, he also adds more shooting for you as well. Which, I mean, you can in today's NBA or in basketball in general, you can never have enough shooting. But he can also, you know, and obviously that spreads the floor, spreads teams out. But he also can play the point guard position because he's done it. He did it in New Orleans primarily when he was there with the Pelicans. So he's a guy that can do that. There's other guys like Darius Garland is another guy. I don't know offhand how much he makes in Cleveland, but they could be looking to move him. He's another guy that's an actual point guard that you could bring in. He's on the smaller side, but he's a hell of a player. So I do think at some point they're going to need to address that need, because missing Fred VanVleet, I mean, that's a huge part of this team from last season. Huge part.
No, and it's, you know, people are like, oh, well, you know, they, you know, should they go after Trae Young? And you know, Trae Young defends as well as you and I do.
Yeah. maybe
and,
worse.
And he's a guy
But he's been mentioned, though.
Makes a ton of money.
He does. I think that's a little too much.
And I don't see how you're able to get a guy like that without giving up players that you don't want to give up, because
depth.
You can't necessarily give up Fred VanVleet. He's got an implied no trade.
Yeah.
You don't want to give up Steven Adams. You don't want to give up Jabari Smith.
You don't want to give up Tari Eason. And Amin Thompson.
And I feel like
Reed Sheppard.
Tari Eason might be the guy who's most likely to Expendable. Be moved, because number one, he hasn't signed an extension.
Yeah.
Number two, he seems to miss a lot of games. He's great when he's on the court. He's shooting 50% from three. And he's shooting like 4.5 threes a game, and he's hitting 50% from three. Like, Tari has been ridiculously good this year, but he does miss a lot of games. And if you're not going to be able to sign him to the kind of deal that he wants, you got to move him and maximize his value. I feel like Tari might be the guy who goes, but he doesn't have enough salary.
Exactly.
And
it's going to take more than just Tari Eason. Like, to get a Trae Young.
Like, I don't want to give up Reed Sheppard. Somebody besides Kevin Durant has to be a guard who shoots threes. And I know Kevin Durant's a forward, but he can kind of play.
He kind of does everything,
he
man.
He can play a big guard, small forward, big forward. He does everything but play point guard. You know, I mean,
He can do that a little bit if he wants to.
If they had to play him in the low post, he could just shoot over somebody.
Yeah.
He shoots over guys, you know, on the block, on the wing. It doesn't matter. Kevin Durant just... He's a 6'11 freak of nature.
That guy in San Antonio may be the only guy he can't easily shoot over.
Yeah, well, that's because he's 7'5". And,
exactly.
And he grew 3 inches last year. So if he grows another 3 inches next year.
Oh, my Lord.
I mean, I like the illustration of.
Just give it up.
You know, it's like it would show like 70s dunk, and it's Dr. J doing like an under the basket windmill. And then 80s dunk, and it's Dominique Wilkins doing a full cradle. And then 90s dunk, and it's Jordan from the foul line. And it goes through, and then it goes, you know, dunking in 2025, and it's Wembanyama standing flat foot just dunking.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, no. But yeah, I do like this lineup, though. So they're 4-0 now with this death lineup, as you're calling it.
Yeah, and,
I believe.
And they've won 17 of 18 games when Tari starts.
Yeah. That's not a bad stat. It's not a bad stat. I just think they are going to need to address the point guard position, because I love Reed Sheppard. I don't think he's to the level yet or at the stage yet of his career in year two where you're going to depend on him heavily in the postseason.
Do you consider him more of a shooting guard?
Probably, but I think for this Rockets team, he's going to need to be more effective as a point guard right now, just based on how this roster looks. That's just my opinion. But I would say, you know, we used to call it combo guards back in the day, right? Guy could do, you know, play the point, play the shooting guard, but I would look at him more as a shooting guard, yes, I would.
Rockets
a smaller shooting guard. Smaller shooting guard, but yes, a shooting guard.
Used to have a really good combo guard.
Which, oh, talking about Steve Francis?
That's what it was, Tracy McGrady.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, but Tracy McGrady was like a combo guard / forward.
Yeah.
He's so like 6'8". Yeah. He's another guy that did a little bit of everything.
Yeah. A lot of combos on that.
A little bit of everything.
But it is the idea of how they, because they're limited by the first apron, which they're right up against.
Yep.
And yes, they got the injury exception, but it doesn't matter because they can't use it.
Yeah.
Because they can't go above the first apron. Mm. So it really does create you're going to have to give guys up off your main roster to get a point guard if you're trying to go that route. And if you're looking for a top end point guard, you're going to have to give up way too much off your roster. Just to make the salaries work.
Exactly.
Because you've got a salary in Fred VanVleet you can't move.
Nope.
And then if you go and get a guy who's a lesser player, you've still got to give up somebody. And it's like, all right, is that even worth it?
Yeah. Probably not.
So I feel like, you know, with Amen Thompson, who's been playing really well lately.
Yeah.
Reed Shepard. I know Aaron Holiday is more of an undersized shooting guard than a point guard.
Yeah.
He's kind of a, hey, I want to find my shot point guard as opposed to I want to distribute the basketball point guard. But they've got to get guys who can just bring the ball up.
Yeah.
Who can manage to handle press defense. Because when they play the teams defensively that press them, and especially the ones that are pressing them 40 feet, that's where they struggle. That's where they get turnovers. They have a hard time getting into their offense. They don't have enough guys with the handles to get through press coverage.
And that's why you need that point guard
that
can bring it up and is not bothered by that pressure and not going to turn the ball over every other possession.
All right, coming up next, Kevin Sumlin is back in the H. Tell you how, why, and all about it when he joins us next.